May it please the court. My name is Timothy Wickmer, and I represent the petitioner Pellavon Seda. We respectfully pray that this court vacate the order of the BIA ordering him removed, which order denied him relief in the form of asylum and withholding of removal. We further ask the court to vacate the finding of the BIA that the petitioner is inadmissible under 8 U.S.C. 1182A6CI, the fraud or misrepresentation ground, and then we further ask that this court grant withholding of removal, or in the alternative, remand the case for consideration of the asylum application under the proper application of the law. There are two fundamental errors in the board's decision, and each of these errors has a related component which has to fatally affect that decision. First, the denial of the asylum and withholding does not survive the abuse of discretion substantial evidence test. The denial of the asylum decision is not supported by substantial evidence. Secondly, the board erred as a matter of law in finding that the removal ground based upon inadmissibility ground based upon fraud and misrepresentation was met. In effect, they put the wrong party to the burden of proof on that fact. Both errors are prejudicial and both relate to the BIA's specific determination reversing the immigration judge's finding of negative credibility. So what you have is you have a decision by the immigration judge that was essentially supported by two pillars. The first pillar, the immigration judge noted correctly that in light of the country condition report and in light of the applicant's testimony, that if the testimony were credible, it could support an asylum claim. However, he denied because he found that the petitioner lacked credibility. It goes up on appeal to the Board of Immigration Appeals. They say, wait a minute, he testified credibly. We're going to reverse that finding, but now we find that somehow he doesn't meet the requirements for asylum. One or the other of those pillars has to fall. In effect, what the BIA's decision does is it allows, they make the correct determination on credibility, but then don't want to levy the consequences on respondent in this case for the consequences of that. With regard to the fraud claim, respondent argues that this is not a live case or controversy under Article 3. That's incorrect. It is certainly live. If you're removed from the United States under any particular ground, you're barred for 10 years from coming back. If you're removed because of fraud, it's a lifetime bar. Petitioner in this case is 27 years old, allowing for a 10-year bar for removal even if he loses, and allowing for normal life expectancy. This adds a penalty of an additional 35-year bar to return to the United States. That's certainly a controversy that he's litigated the entire way. Also, it's not speculative that he could come back. His wife is a U.S. citizen, his wife is a permanent resident. She'll be taking the oath for citizenship probably in the next month. He has a child who's a U.S. citizen. At the very least, one of those two could bring him back. If the fraud were not an issue, he could come back to the United States, so it's clearly a controversy. There's no evidence that the passport is fraudulent. In effect, they apply the wrong standard of proof. He comes into the airport with an Albanian passport. He doesn't attempt to use the passport to enter the United States. He has it. He immediately declares his intention to file for asylum. This is what you're supposed to do under the law. There was no visa in this passport. He could not have used it to enter the United States. I think the respondent sort of naively says, well, he used it to enter the United States because he had it with him and he tried to get in. But without a visa or a claim for asylum, you don't get in. So the passport didn't have a visa in it. He didn't use it to try to enter. So even if it were a fake document, he didn't use it. And he did apply for asylum, which is what he's supposed to do.
You challenge that it was a fake document?
The evidence in the record, yes, Your Honor, the evidence in the record does not establish that it was fake.
How do you get a passport in Albania? Take your picture and all that nonsense.
Right. Okay. Admittedly, there could be some evidence that it might be. However, not being an expert in the obtaining of passports in Albania, thankfully, we can apply for a passport in the United States by mail. Okay. Theoretically, that's what happened here. Theoretically, there was an application that his brother walked in, got, and took out. A whole host of things could have happened, including fake documents, but that wasn't proven. This one wasn't examined by the service's document expert and determined to be fraudulent. As you heard in the first case today, they didn't have anything like that.
No, from your position, it doesn't make any difference.
Excuse me, Your Honor, I'm didn't hear.
As I understand your position, it doesn't make any difference.
Correct. The final result is that even if it were fake, it wasn't used. You know, that old, it's not material because it didn't affect its admissibility or inadmissibility. What does a passport prove? ID and country of origin, neither of which are at issue, both of which were found by the immigration judge, and neither is being challenged by the respondent. Plus, there's that scienter option. You know, if it was obtained by someone else, he has a plausible story that he didn't know it was fake if it was. There was no intent to deceive, which is a part of fraud. Classic Black's Law Dictionary definition. There was no intent to deceive because he didn't use it to obtain admission. Allowing for that issue to go, and the biggest thing, excuse me, to return to that just one minute, the immigration judge didn't believe him because he didn't testify credibly in the immigration judge's opinion. As soon as the BIA found that he did, the reasons for this finding of the fraudulent document sort of go away. And for the service to say, and for the government to say, well, we've proved that you're an alien, now the burden of proof is on you to prove admissibility, that can't possibly mean what it means in this case, or else they could charge him with anything and he'd have no ability to enter the United States. Assuming for argument's sake that he were to lose his asylum case, he can't prove that he's admissible. They could charge him with fake documents. They could charge him with the Lindbergh baby kidnapping. They could charge him with genocide in Rwanda. There's no way he can rebut it under the standard that they wish you to use. It's completely unsupportable. With regard to the asylum claim itself, past persecution has been established. Remember that a credible testimony, as you know, can underpin an asylum claim by itself. The immigration judge ruled it was consistent with the country conditions. On page 33 of the respondent's brief, they admit that assuming credible testimony and a nexus to political opinion or some protected ground, that the BIA's determination that this does not give rise to past persecution is not consistent with Seventh Circuit case law. We agree with that 100%. So it seems that the issue is, was the persecution on account of a protected ground? It was on account of a protected ground, at least on the account of political opinion or membership in a particular social group. Political opinion, INS versus Elias Zacharias, it can be actual or imputed. The petitioner, was active in the Democratic Party, credibly testified according to BIA, assuming that to be true. He's got political activity. Sure, he wasn't the head of the Democratic Party, but not just party leaders are immune from being persecuted. His family was heavily active in the Democratic Party. His brother was a party leader, was appointed to be the police chief, or he was appointed to be the chief of police for a while in order to keep the peace. Well, in the course of his duties, he had occasion to arrest Socialist Party members. They didn't like that, and they sought to persecute him and his family. Two quick points so that I can save the rest of my time for rebuttal. They say naively, well, they didn't really want him. They just wanted his brother to come back into town. Well, why did they want the brother to come back into town? They wanted to harm the brother. The brother's part of the family. When the car came up on the sidewalk and hit the mother, brother wasn't around. It wasn't as though they're only attacking the brother. They're going after this family. 8 separate incidents of threats, harassment, violence, attempted murder. Finally, family is social group. The government will argue that this is foreclosed because it wasn't raised on the underlying case with the BIA. However, if you look at the administrative record, the BIA discussed this on page 3 and 4 of the record. It's covered under page 32 and page 40 of the brief before the BIA. Admittedly, not in the strongest terms, but the activity of the family was clearly detailed, and that had a great element to do with the case. So that it either has an impact as to the political activity of the family, actual or imputed, or to the family as social group. In the current case, considering what's at stake, the life and death decision that you have to come to grips with, the petitioner should be given the benefit of the doubt. If there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
Mr. Hurd.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Theodore Hurd, appearing on behalf of the Respondent Attorney General in support of affirmance of the order of the Board of Immigration Appeals. Your Honor, I'd like to spend most of my time, if I can, on the persecution issue, which counsel just addressed, but I wanted to straighten out, I think, a few issues concerning the passport issue. I think, first of all, the burden of proof has been miscast here by counsel for petitioner. As we read 8 CFR 1240.8, when you have a situation of admissibility, it is then the burden of the applicant to show that he or she has lawful papers. And I think this puts the burden not on the government, but on petitioner.
Why is it important at all? He didn't use the passport, even if it was a phony to get in, did he?
Well, Your Honor, I think the record suggests that, in fact, he did present the passport at his interview at O'Hare Airport. That's what the interview...
Yeah, but his interview was after a questioning. He came in and said he was seeking asylum.
And he presented a passport.
Yeah, yes. But that had nothing to do with the seeking asylum. You don't have to have a passport to seek asylum. As a matter of fact, the two are practically diametrically opposed.
Well, he did bring a passport.
Well, he did bring a passport.
Yes.
He might have had a counterfeit $100 bill in his pocket, too, but I want to know what that has to do with presenting a false document in order to gain entry. He didn't need it. He said he was here seeking asylum. The document itself, it's immaterial whether it was forged, unforged, or whatever it was.
Well, Your Honor, I think that just in terms of the neutral application of the immigration laws, the INS officials correctly charged him with each of the counts. And there were four counts. He lacked a non-immigrant visa, he lacked an immigrant visa, he lacked what they said was a valid passport, and consequently, by the nature of his passport, he also was charged with fraud in connection with that passport.
That's the part that baffles me. I mean, I have no idea what that had to do with immigration. He didn't need the passport to claim refugee status.
Your Honor, I'm not disagreeing with you that the asylum issue...
Well, then why do we have to charge him with that now and hang the... rock on his neck for them.
Well, Your Honor, I think that the
why is it sufficient to say, get out of here? No, you know, come back when you got a better case.
Well, Your Honor, I think that the immigration officials can properly charge someone if they believe that.
Well, I guess I don't expect you to confess error right here. You got a tough job to do.
Well, I think that it was a proper charge, and I would submit that putting aside the issues that Your Honors have asked about the nature of the passport, we also have material discrepancies within that passport, the three different dates of birth in the passport, but I'll rely on my papers for that point. One final point on the passport is that in our opening brief, we asked why is this issue before the court, and counsel did not file a reply brief, but for the first time says, well, now there's an issue of citizenship of his spouse. I guess I would say we could address that either in 20HA, or all I'm saying is that there is a waiver procedure if that indeed is something that it has to be pursued, a hardship waiver. So it's not, I don't believe, a permanent bar. But I can pass on from that issue to, I think, the more important issue, which is that of persecution. One thing I would disagree with, and maybe I misheard my colleague, but I did not interpret the immigration judge's ruling to say that if he had found the witnesses to be credible, he would have found past persecution. The most I read from the immigration judge's ruling is that he said, if these people were plausible, if these people were credible, they stated things that aren't implausible as judged by Albanian country conditions, but he did not make any finding of past persecution. So we really are reviewing the board's decision, and I would submit that the board's decision was supported by substantial evidence because Palavancita failed to show that the harm that he incurred or the harm that his family incurred was on account of his political opinion. Now, counsel has said, well, he was a socialist and his brother was a socialist. But Palavancita, our applicant, was really not a leader of the Socialist Party. There are no stated threats by any of the people who attacked the Citas that they were after Palavancita because he was a socialist. It's very clear from all the record evidence in this case that, as counsel has said, that the police chief was the focus of attack. And it was really, going back to the context of this, when Axum Sita, the police chief, became police chief, that apparently was a decision agreed upon by both the local socialists and the local Democrats. What happened, what was the catalyst to the attack, was basically some criminals who were arrested under the police chief that happened to be socialists, and they retaliated for having been arrested. That seems to be what the record evidence tells us. And of course there was a series of threats against the family. But what we're arguing to this court for affirmance is that substantial evidence supports the government's position that a reasonable finder of facts could find that this was not on account of political opinion, but really criminal activity, local lawlessness, and basically thuggery. So the court doesn't really need to reach at all the issue of the level of harm that Mr. Sita and his family suffered. Coming back to counsel's point, it seems to me that when we parse through each of the threats, each of the objective activities, it was really directed at getting the police chief to resign, getting him to come out of hiding once he did resign, and take action against him. The The cases we've relied on in our brief, I think, are quite illuminating. The Marquez case from this circuit, which involved a lieutenant colonel who was taking actions against both the husband and wife, and the husband had been a political figure of some sort. We rely on the Amansi case from the Third Circuit, where a son was retaliated against because his father was a preacher and a native cult objected to that father's preaching. And we rely on the Sangha case of the Ninth Circuit. Again, a situation where a son was targeted because of a father's political activities against the Sikh separatists. What we have here is Mr. Sita, Pahlavan Sita, becomes a target, but it's not on account of his political opinion. It's really all based on really local lawlessness that's directed at his brother. Coming back to the other point I think that counsel has alluded to is he has asked for the relief of a grant of asylum or withholding. But as we've stated in our brief, even if this court were to find that there was past persecution, we submit that there hasn't been a showing of a well-founded fear of future persecution, and indeed that the evidence of record, supplemented by your court taking judicial notice of the current Albanian conditions, shows that Albania is a far different place from it was in 1997, and indeed even as of 1998 it was settling down to a large extent. So we submit that this court can still go ahead and deny asylum based on the fact that there hasn't been a well-founded fear of future persecution against Mr. Pahlavan Sita. Finally, Your Honor, I would rely on our briefs on the social group issue. We submit that was not raised at any time before the agency. If you look at the plaintiff's brief before the BIA, it's not ever stated that this was a social group issue. This is an issue that under Ventura, the agency would have to have the first opportunity to look at and review, and it can't really be raised for the first time in this court, not having been pleaded or argued or really fairly presented below. Your Honor, if you have no further questions, I would ask for affirmance. Okay.
1 minute.
I'll be brief.
Yeah.
Page 15 and 16 of our opening brief, we raised the fraud issue being an additional penalty. It's in the brief. It's been raised. Past persecution on account of political views. I know it can be confusing, but the petitioner, my client, they were members of the Democratic Party, not the Socialists. It's exactly reversed. If you find the testimony credible, if the BIA found the testimony credible, no reasonable fact finder could fail to find that this constitutes a valid claim for asylum, and it must be granted. Action. They wanted to take action on the police chief. Action is a term the government uses rather euphemistically. Action euphemistically really means politically motivated murder. This case is different than Marquez because this is not an apolitical feud. The arrest of members of the Socialist Party in the charged atmosphere of Albania at that time was a political act of necessity. Remember, matter of SP, mixed motive okay, don't have to conclusively show motive, the evidence is there, and you can find it. As far as the new country conditions reports, even they don't establish that the country conditions have changed enough, and they weren't at issue in the original case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Case will be taken under advisement.